From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Nikhil Chandavarkar. He's Chief of Communications and Outreach Branch at the Division for Sustainable Development at the United Nations. And we're coming to you from his UN office in New York City. Our topic, the 17 Sustainable Development Goals adopted during the UN General Assembly in October. Successors to the Millennium Development Goals, the Sustainable Development Goals, which aim to eradicate poverty and control climate change by the year 2030, were adopted by all 193 member states during the 70th UN General Assembly. Most of the Millennium Development Goals have been met, largely because of progress in India and China, but there were just 8 of them, mostly focused on cutting extreme poverty and improving healthcare and education. In contrast, there are 17 Sustainable Development Goals and 169 associated targets. In addition, the 17 goals were established by consensus rather than written by a few specialists from developed countries. The cost is estimated to be $3 trillion. The new agenda commits every country to take an array of actions that would not only address the root causes of poverty, malnutrition, and hunger, but would also increase economic growth and prosperity and meet people's health, education, and social needs, all the while protecting the environment. We'll talk with Nikhil Chandavarkar about the specific targets and the various challenges to their measurement and implementation. Nikhil Chandavarkar holds a PhD in economics from Georgetown University. In addition to a vast collection of published work, including 2 books, he is also fluent in 7 languages. Nikhil Chandavarkar began his UN career in 1979, and he has served in numerous posts around the world. And we're delighted he has made time to speak with us about the Sustainable Development Goals, which will anchor the global development agenda for the next 15 years. Nikhil Chandavarkar, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me, Carol.
And thank you for hosting us here in your office. Well, Nikhil, it's quite an ambitious agenda, 17 goals, 169 targets. First, how do these goals differ from the Millennium Development Goals?
They're fundamentally different from the Millennium Development Goals in that they deal not only with the social sectors, but also with the economic and the environmental sectors. They are goals for not just people, but also for the planet and for prosperity, peace and justice, as well as using partnerships. This is the major difference with the MDGs. The SDG agenda is not an aid agenda. It is an agenda for all countries, both rich countries as well as poor countries. And this is where it differs. Many ambassadors of rich countries have pointed out that one of the biggest challenges they will face at home is to convince their citizens that this agenda is also about them, that there are issues of poverty, inequality, even in the rich world. And the SDG agenda seeks to address that too by the year 2030.
Well, that's a very interesting distinction. In terms of the previous goals, MDGs, would you say that the targets were in fact reached?
It's a mixed record. Certainly the poverty goal, thanks to the progress of large emerging countries, as you mentioned, China, India, but certainly also Brazil. Brazil lifted 30 million people out of poverty. The average was met. It was a global average and the poverty was indeed cut in one half. But in many countries in sub-Saharan Africa, progress has been less impressive. Growth rates have been high in Africa, averaging 4-5% over the last 10 years, but poverty rates have not across the board reduced the way they have in the large emerging countries. And this is one of the challenges for the new agenda, finishing the job, actually getting to eliminating extreme poverty by the year 2030.
Indeed, that seems to be goal number one. Before we get into the goals specifically, let's talk about the actual number. Again, you have 17 compared to the 8. Explain also why the difference.
Since this is a broader agenda that also deals with prosperity, planet issues in a more comprehensive way than purely the people issues, as the MDGs, you need more goals. A useful technique I use in outreach work is to say that the first 7 goals are the people goals. These are the goals that carry on the work, seek to finish the work of the Millennium Development Goals. The next 5 goals deal with the hard economic agenda, the prosperity goals, infrastructure, industrialization, employment, macroeconomics, things that were not addressed by the MDGs. Then you have the 3 planet goals. biodiversity, climate change, oceans. You just had a passing reference in Goal 7, the MDGs. It was almost an afterthought. Here, these are deep planet goals which are connected to other conventions, like the Biodiversity Convention, the Climate Change Convention, and so they have much more heft than did MDG 7. Then finally, you have a very interesting goal, Goal 16, which is completely new because it deals with peace and justice issues at both the international and national level. And this is completely new because this is something that would normally have been dealt with in other parts of the UN, the First Committee, the Political Committee, or the Security Council. It's now been brought in, and in many ways it empowers the General Assembly to look at peace and justice issues. And then finally, partnerships. Goal 17 is much broader than MDG 8. Partnership means not just aid resources. In the days of the MDGs, there was a lot of focus on foreign aid. Here, the agenda, which was set in great detail at the Addis Ababa Conference on Financing for Development in July, deals also with domestic resources. It deals with transfer of technology, partnerships, public-private partnerships, and capacity building. It's a much broader agenda.
Well, it's fascinating, really, and the way you broke it down really makes a lot more sense. The other thing that is different that I had studied is the fact that the way you were able to elaborate these goals in a more consensus fashion. Talk about that as well.
Certainly. You have to remember that unlike the MDG, which was pretty much a technocratic exercise, what happened was that they took an OECD report called Better World for All, and it was sort of behind the scenes converted into goals, never actually adopted by the General Assembly. This is important to remember. The Millennium Development Goals, the Millennium Declaration doesn't refer to the goals. If you look at it carefully, it refers to many other things. But the MDGs were sort of tacked on, as almost as an afterthought. This is why they were criticized. Here, no. There are 3 years of negotiations and consensus. And if you include the Rio plus 20, because the embryo of this new agenda was in the Rio plus 20 outcome.
Talk about Rio
plus 20 conference. The conference on sustainable development that took place in Rio in 2012. 20 years after the original Rio conference, the future we want outcome does outline this agenda in broad brushstrokes. But over the 3 years since then, detailed negotiations and the open working group hammered out these goals with the full participation of 197 countries. In other words, it's the UN members plus four others. So it's a much broader coalition of countries than even the membership of the UN. And it's truly consensus. In the beginning of August, consensus was reached. All countries said that they were willing to go along with this agenda, and it was gaveled in right at the beginning of the September summit. So it represents, in a way that the MDG agenda did not, the will of 197 countries. And this is really unusual. This is what gives it real weight compared to the MDG agenda.
Well, we'll talk about how to implement the will of 197 countries in just a moment. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Back to Press Conference USA with our special guest, Nikhil Chandavarkar, Chief of the Communications and Outreach Branch at the Division for Sustainable Development at the United Nations. We're talking about the new Sustainable Development Agenda, consisting of 17 goals recently adopted by UN member states. Well, back to you, Nikhil Chandavarkar, to discuss further these very laudable and noble goals. One thing I read that they are not necessarily legally binding. So, of course, the challenge is how do you get member states to implement them? What is the accountability process?
It's important not to underestimate the moral weight of a consensus of this magnitude. One of the outcomes of the summit, we saw that many countries are already implementing. China, for example, announced a $2 billion contribution for collaboration between countries of the South. Spain, an SDG fund, focused on all 17 goals. Impressive commitments have come out of even this conference, so that the challenge will be on implementation. But at the same time, I think it is doable. And the key body where implementation will be overseen is the high-level political forum. This is a ministerial body, a new body set up by the Rio conference of 2012, which meets every July here in New York. at ministerial level, and it looks at progress on achieving sustainable development. And the resolution of the General Assembly requires this body now to monitor progress. And the UN Secretariat will be putting together, with inputs from the entire system, a report every year that they will review. Now, implementation is not just the responsibility of the UN. It's actually as much a domestic as an international responsibility. Particularly even in rich countries, you will find much more interest and commitment in the SDGs than there was in the MDGs.
The challenge of setting targets per country and then monitoring them and hoping to achieve them, how is that done? Are there in each country committees that are trying to help the government and private sector and civil society, you know, reach these goals, ending poverty, ending hunger, promoting gender equality, all of the various goals that you have outlined?
There are many good practices. One of the most impressive ones is Germany. Germany has a National Sustainable Development Commission, which is actually presided over by the Chancellor herself, Chancellor Merkel, and it brings together all the contributions of the federal states. And it involves the private sector, civil society, and so on. There are many of these commissions around the world. But what we point out is that each country is free to set up its own mechanisms and some sort of strategy, maybe a national development plan or national development strategy, should be the basis. One of the criticisms of the SDG agenda is, how do you monitor 169 targets? What are the indicators? And
exactly.
There is currently, under the Statistical Commission, an interagency and expert group on the SDGs indicators. By next March, they will come up with a proposal, listening to civil society, listening to inputs from countries. And this will be the basis for monitoring the global agenda. It'll be used by the high-level political forum for the reports and so on. At the same time, not all countries will have data. This is one of the big challenges, so that each country will need to see. Not all the goals may be relevant. The extreme example is, a landlocked country would not be interested in the oceans goal. The SDG profile at the country level may look different from country to country. Some countries may want to focus on particular goals, others on all of them. But at the global level, certainly the high-level political forum will need to look at progress across the world, the aggregates for all the goals.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our guest is Nikhil Chandavarkar. He's chief of the Communications and Outreach Branch at the Division for Sustainable Development at the United Nations. We're talking about the new Sustainable Development Agenda, consisting of 17 goals. They were recently adopted by UN member states. I'm Carol Castiel, and this is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA, or connect with us on Facebook. You can send an old-fashioned email as well to PCUSA@voanews.com. Either way, tell us where you're from and how you listen to the program. Here's a shout-out to a loyal listener of PCUSA, Mohammed Alizeh from Helmand, Afghanistan. Well, back to you, Nikhil Chandavarkar, to talk about now the financing. You mentioned earlier a fund set up by China, I believe Germany. How will these goals be financed?
When we speak of finance, it's important to distinguish aid from finance for policies and programs of the government. If you look at the world gross national product, world income is somewhere around $80 trillion a year. Perhaps a third of that represents the public sector worldwide. Say if it were 90, then 30 trillion. This is what we're talking about. How will these resources be used? Not aid resources. When they come up with figures like 2 trillion or 3 trillion, they're talking about aid. Whereas here, this agenda talks about reorienting existing resources, changing consumption and production patterns of the private sector in order to achieve these goals. So I think it's important to take a broad view of resources, not focusing only on flows. It's also about reorganizing in the rich countries as well as the poor countries, devoting more to the green economy, devoting more to social programs, devoting more to education and fighting inequality, for example. And that's essentially a domestic issue in all countries. And it's reorienting that $30 trillion that is in the hands of governments today to achieve these goals. This is really the challenge. And I think that's how I like to look at the issue of resources.
You talked about partners, that this goes beyond aid. Talk about partners in the private sector and civil society, how you're going to mobilize and catalyze them right. toward the goals.
Partnerships happens to be one of the responsibilities of my branch. We have the Sustainable Development Knowledge Platform and the SDG Partnerships Platform. We were given this mandate after the Rio conference, and at sustainabledevelopment.un.org, one can look at the over 1,500 partnerships that have been registered with us, public-private partnerships, for sustainable development. During the conference, this last summit, another 41 large partnerships were added, and they capture the spirit of the new way of supporting development. It's not just the traditional official development assistance, but resources from the private sector. It might be corporate social responsibility. It might be NGOs operating. It could be self-help organizations at the local level. All of this is registered. It is a small sample. There are many partnerships that are not registered on there, but they capture the spirit of the new frontier in sustainable development resources.
With respect to Goal 16, which is promoting peaceful and inclusive societies for sustainable development, providing access to justice for all, and building effective, accountable, and inclusive institutions at all levels, that's particularly resonant now as we see proliferation of conflicts. Of course, the terrible, devastating conflict in Syria, not to mention now Yemen, and of course, there are simmering conflicts in so many other regions, whether in eastern Ukraine or sub-Saharan Africa, Boko Haram ravaging northern Nigeria. How will you deal with these impediments to progress, or how can you address these goals without trying to solve or somehow resolve these conflicts, which certainly are going to impede development progress?
We always, in the UN, ever since the Charter, we look at peace and development as two sides of the same coin. One cannot exist without the other. And if you look behind many of the armed conflicts, you often find development issues.
That is right.
You find environmental issues, access to water, access to natural resources. And I think if you look at Goal 10, for example, which is equity, unless you address inequity in distribution or rights, access to resources, access to water, then you cannot really have peace. So this is why it's so important. I think Goal 16 is a major step forward, because traditionally the development agenda ignored this. Mm-hmm. So in many ways it's a window, a bridge to the political side of the UN, while at the same time not impinging on the mandates of the Security Council or Peacebuilding Commission. It recognizes that there is this conflict dimension and that it's very hard to speak. In Syria, you mentioned Syria, they have gone back 40 years in human development. It was a middle human development index country, and this is true in many conflict societies, that before the conflict began, they were at, actually, particularly in the Middle East, at a middle level of human development with a lot of the social indicators. Now, many of these people, the communities are destroyed and they're refugees. So it clearly must be on the radar screen, part of the equation. And that's the big merit of Goal 16.
I also noticed that Goal 16 includes tackling corruption, bribery, and theft. I mean, certainly that's a key part of why many countries aren't developing properly, because of corruption, bribery, monies are being siphoned off to fill the pockets of people, as opposed to right. developing institutions and providing education and health for their populations. But how do you do that? It's a very delicate area.
Yes, certainly, yes. I think that it's important to remember Goal 16 has both an international and a national dimension. It speaks of rule of law at the international as well as national level. The other side of the coin of bribery is very often the corporations in their headquarters also need to be held accountable. Many rich countries have started doing this, so that when a corporation bribes a functionary in a poor country, they're also accountable at the headquarters level. This is the international dimension. I quote now in one of the events on the SDGs, an ambassador from an unnamed sub-Saharan African country said they put the minister in jail, but the corporation declared bankruptcy or basically was able to write off the bribe against taxes. In other words, it was legal in the home country. And I think it's important to keep this international dimension in mind. I think the political will is there. At least we see from the declarations of both leaders of rich countries as well as poor countries and middle-income countries, a general culture of transparency and accountability, which I think is the spirit of Goal 16. But we need to do both, act at the national level as well as the international level.
Absolutely. Pointing to the Millennium Development Goals, or from your perspective right now as we embark on trying to implement these 17 Sustainable Development Goals, are there some success stories? You did mention earlier in the conversation China, India, even Brazil. Any other countries that you can point to that have made progress that can be models for others to try to emulate?
Certainly in Southeast Asia, Vietnam, the Doi Moi Poverty Alleviation Program is quite remarkable. The USAID, the U.S. has been an important development partner for Vietnam. Within Africa, certainly South Africa is quite remarkable. Certainly a lot more needs to be done since the end of the apartheid regime in terms of equality, particularly Goal 10. But they are very much part of this emerging economy group. Unfortunately, of course, you mentioned some of the conflict countries, and there they've actually gone back in time, 50 years, 60 years in terms of undone development. We have a few cases, and we will be looking at some pilot countries to support both in the different regions, countries like Togo and others, where they have made notable progress. One of the remarkable experiences, the lessons learned from Brazil, a case that I'm very familiar with, is the actual cost of the poverty program was very small. So that I think where it demonstrates that if the political will is there, a relatively small investment can alleviate hunger and poverty.
And Nikhil Chandavarkar, what do you see are the biggest obstacles to implementation, whether political, cultural, financial?
I think one of the biggest challenges will be to interest particular aid partners in the more difficult goals. The easy ones are the social goals, because there's a large legacy of projects in those areas. The first seven, which I call the people goals. The next five goals are a big challenge, because infrastructure requires money. Industrialization can't be done overnight. And the risk I see is that donors and others may tend to focus on the first seven goals, and of course some of the environmental goals, because those have constituencies too. I think goal 16 is a very hard nut to crack. I already see people shying away from it because it's politically sensitive, can be complicated, or it can be reduced to something very simple, just training judges or something. 17 can also be simplified just to an aid agenda, and I think that the more subtle aspects like technology transfer and others may not take place. This is one of the risks. And so I think it's important to capture it in all its richness. The press has criticized some of the campaigns, like the one about global goals, that they have tended to simplify the language. I think it's important. Certainly in the UN, we feel that the full title should be used, Sustainable Development Goals. Make that familiar, just as people became familiar with the MDGs rather than speaking of global goals. And to use the actual words, they were negotiated over 3 years, inclusive, equitable, rather than using words like strong or vibrant. I think that's very important, to understand the richness of this agenda and to communicate it.
To what extent will civil society and the private sector have a strong role in cooperating? And to what extent and how will you be able to incorporate them and monitor their participation? Right.
Civil society, I always gave the statistic of the outcome document of the Rio Conference, which is the precursor to the 2030 agenda. There were about 6,000 pages of inputs. Two-thirds of those came from civil society. So many of the innovative ideas on justice, inequality, and so on in the new agenda came from civil society. They have much greater access to the UN than they did in the past. We now speak not only of the 9 major groups, which are well known for the last 20 years, but we have other stakeholders, people dealing with human rights, development justice, the disability communities, aging. And so there's a much richer cast of characters than we had in the past, monitoring us, holding us to account, criticizing us, coming to the high-level political forum and speaking out. They have official pulpits to speak, which they didn't in the past. I always give the example of the first Rio conference. I was serving in Brazil at the time as deputy res rep of UNDP, and there was almost an apartheid. You had in the Flamengo Beach, Praia do Flamengo, you had a civil society forum, and you had in the Rio Centro, the conference center miles away, some 30 miles away, you had the conference. So there were two separate. Right now, you had the new conference in 2012. Civil society opened the conference. You had all the 9 major groups speaking, even before member states. And that spirit has been carried on. They have a voice at the table now. They don't always get their way. They tend to be unhappy when the outcome comes out, because every outcome is a political consensus. But at the same time, they're there. And they will be there during the implementation phase throughout their very much part of the scenery and a welcome part of the scenery. We welcome them. My branch is responsible for our interface with civil society, private sector.
Which geographical regions do you think pose the greatest challenges in terms of implementation?
I think it should come as no surprise it's sub-Saharan Africa. Many of the other regions have forged ahead, the emerging economies in the different regions, the so-called BRIC countries. It's sub-Saharan Africa where a series of structural issues have impeded social and environmental development despite economic growth. You have high growths, usually because of the exports of mining products, natural resources. At the same time, that is not trickling down. I think this is going to be one of the challenges, changing structures to produce more equity and making sure that this growth does trickle down to all sectors of society.
And as you said earlier, there's this nexus between development and peace. So that also will help to reduce conflict. For example, northern Nigeria, we know Boko Haram is in part a creation of the fact that there's a lot of inequities in the north and a lot of dissatisfaction. That's not the only reason, obviously, but that too can have a very positive effect on reducing conflict.
Again, whenever we get to Goal 16, conflict and development, it's important to look at the international and the national level. The arms trade, where the UN has made incredible progress in terms of controlling the flow of small arms, is something to look at because these arms are flowing in. It's a very lucrative business worldwide, which I think needs oversight from the international community because these arms flow in and conflicts that may have been resolved in past generations through dialogue are now resolved through arms. Certainly environmental conflicts, finding ways to provide access to water, to natural resources will go a long way. Reconstructing local governance agreements. Côte d'Ivoire is one example where Oufet de Boigny over many years was able to informally keep a dialogue going between the different groups. When he passed, the gift he had disappeared with him. And I think some of the sectarianism that was there came to the surface again.
Before we close, I'd like you to address gender inequality, and particularly the importance of giving women greater access to education in so many countries, for whatever reason, cultural, religious, or others. You know, women are often denied their equal rights. How important is that goal, and do you think sufficient resources, whether education and financial, will be applied to promote the status of women?
One of the big changes is we now have a UN agency, UN Women, which didn't exist in 2000 when the Millennium Development Goals were launched. I think there's much more of a culture of gender equality as a commonly held universal value than in the past. There are, I think, holdouts, countries where this is not the case. I won't name them. I think we know where they are for cultural reasons or other. But I think the international community, through conferences, through conventions, legislation at the international level, must continue to emphasize the rights of women because it's been clearly shown that countries who have educated women, educated girls, have forged ahead and those that have not lagged behind.
Indeed. Well, that's precisely why I wanted you to talk about that. Nikhil Chandavarkar, do you have a website or any information you'd like to impart to our listeners so that they can perhaps follow along and maybe encourage their own governments and civil societies to participate and try to implement these goals?
I would encourage your listeners to bookmark sustainabledevelopment.un.org because it's a two-way platform. They can upload their experiences. They can share experiences with us. Civil society has used it extensively during the preparations of this agenda, and I would encourage your listeners to do the same. It's the Sustainable Development Knowledge Platform. They can also post partnerships, public-private partnerships. It's going to be an important tool that the High-Level Political Forum will use in implementing the agenda and keeping track of it.
Nikhil Chandavarkar is the Chief of Communications and Outreach Branch at the Division for Sustainable Development at the United Nations. Well, Nikhil, thank you so much for your time and sharing your insights about the new Sustainable Development Goals.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in New York City and Washington. Thanks to Iakovos Balassi for booking our guest. Our engineer was Dan Brody. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.